Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
The bees dying?
Oh, the bees.
Yes.
The bees are dying.
They're dying. And this is bad for us because if the bees die, there's no cross-pollination. All of our crops will not continue to produce things that we need.
It's very serious.
It's very serious. Yeah. This is going to have long-term ramifications.
And they couldn't figure out what it was for the longest time.
Right. And now they're saying they think it's from cell phone usage or the cell phone towers and all of those different...
It's very dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
And nobody's taken...
It all began about a year ago. An American beekeeper inspected his hives and found all his bees had disappeared. The same was happening in other parts of America. Bee colonies were collapsing. And Background Briefing today is replaying a program we first broadcast in July. Since then, there's been some new scientific research published on why American bees are dying. But there are no conclusive answers yet. Hello, I'm Stan Correy, and this is ABC Radio National. Bees pollinate almost all the fruit and veggies we eat. Pumpkins, apples, cucumbers, cherries, melons, avocados, to name just a few. And they're significant in the production of seeds for asparagus, carrots, celery, onions, and turnips. And one particular crop, almonds in the US and now in Australia, is transforming the world of beekeeping and of bees.
What has happened is something serendipitous came along that people found out, or doctors found out, that almonds are good for you. They're actually a food that is normally considered a confection, but it's good for you. The almond board got a very aggressive promotion going on for almonds. They actually, I just heard recently, send out sales reps to cardiologists at hospitals to promote the heart benefits of almonds. So they go right to the doctors to do this. So they leave no stone unturned in a very good promotion of almonds, and it's a legitimate promotion because they are a healthy food. So what's happened is worldwide almond sales have taken off.
Californian beekeeper Randy Oliver. The almonds need bees, and if there are no bees, there are no almonds. The impacts are not only culinary, but economic. When America decided there was a syndrome called colony collapse disorder, the alarm bells went crazy, blaming everything from mobile phones to Osama bin Laden. The buzz on the bees was overworked to the point of parody in the US media.
As we said, something mysterious is happening to bees. Millions of them are dying in the biggest blight ever reported in the US. As CBS News correspondent John Blackstone reports, it's terrible news for the people who depend on bees.
Among America's beekeepers right now, the buzz is all about bees mysteriously dying. Louise Rosberg has lost tens of thousands.
Just here, there's nothing there. There's no bees on the ground anywhere. There's just a completely empty hive.
You're looking live at bees. Honey bees are a sweet advantage to farmers, but bee experts have noticed a strange phenomenon. Millions of them missing, possibly dead, no longer born, leaving produce unpollinated, hurting nearly $14 billion of industry.
Yeah, beekeeper Dave Hackenberg joins us now live from Tampa. He was the first to report the bee colony collapse to researchers. Good morning to you, Dave. So you started noticing on your farm that you had fewer and fewer colonies, right?
The bees here in Florida just basically disappeared, gone.
Colony collapse disorder is a catchy name, and the news went quickly round the world. In Australia, Senate estimates asked Dr. Peter Thornburgh to explain it.
This disorder, Senator, is a poorly understood phenomenon at this stage. It's, as you said, it's been reported particularly about North America, but also within parts of Europe, Poland and Spain, and more recently some reports out of Switzerland and Germany. There's speculation about a variety of causes that range from environmental change, stress-related impacts, malnutrition, unknown pathogens, mites, including varroa mites, pesticides that are based on nicotine sort of base, and emissions from cellular phones, and other sort of such devices, and also genetically modified crops. These are all theories. Various bee specialists disagree with each other on these.
Dr. Thornburgh, then Australia's acting chief veterinary officer. He also commented on the fact that American bees have to work a lot harder than Australian bees.
Another issue is the fact that in America they move beehives around long distances and a lot, and they force production by feeding them sugar syrups and other things.
The bottom line is, no one knows what's causing CCD.
There's a great variety of theories, but no particular single proven cause.
That was in May. There's still no proven cause. But one name keeps getting mentioned. The varroa mite, or varroa destructor. An unpleasant creature that is endemic in America and many other countries, and also turned up in New Zealand a few years ago. Australia is the only country in the world where the varroa destructor doesn't yet exist, as far as we know. Here's a bit of history. Australian native bees are not particularly good at pollinating European crops, so in 1822, HMS Isabella brought the European honeybee to Australia. All's been going well, though the varroa destructor mite is thriving in Asia, where it doesn't harm its original host, the Asian honeybee, or Apis serrana. But there's constant danger that it will stow away and turn up here. One recent American article described this creature as looking like a baked bean with fangs. To find out just what the varroa destructor is, Background Briefing visited Melbourne Museum entomologist Ken Walker, who said basically varroa feeds on the bee's blood and then breeds in the larvae.
It's a predator, and you can see these large mites working on the actual adults. Imagine if your body was covered in mites the size of a football. You can understand the stress that would actually cause on an adult, as well as the larvae being attacked by these mites the size of a football.
So is the mite an insect, or is it a grub? What is it?
Mites are invertebrates, like insects are. They are more closely related to spiders in that they have eight legs as compared to six, but they're certainly within the arthropod or invertebrate group. Now, don't forget that 99.9% of all animals in the world are invertebrates.
And how does the mite, the varroa destructor mite, how does it travel? Does it attach itself to a live bee and will travel with those bees?
That's correct. It can't fly. As you can imagine, the size of the mite's very small. It needs to actually hop onto the bee to transfer from hive to hive and that. And that's one of the great dangers we have about importing species of insects that may actually physically carry the mite into Australia.
Entomologist Ken Walker looks after the display hive at Melbourne Museum, where so far the biggest problem for the bees has been an early invasion of Argentine ants. Ken Walker also told Background Briefing that Australian customs have specially trained beagle dogs who can sniff out bees. Some unscrupulous bee lovers have, it seems, tried to smuggle bees in writing pens. Any illegal import is more than likely carrying varroa destructor. And you can see photographs of varroa, the baked bean with fangs, on Background Briefing's website. The world expert on this predator is an Australian scientist, CSIRO entomologist Dennis Anderson, and he gave the mite its frightening name, destructor. After the varroa has moved into a new hive, Dennis Anderson says, it strikes at the developing larvae, the brood.
The mite reproduces on the brood of the bee, so it invades the brood, the female mite does. She enters the brood cell at a particular time. She then progresses on to produce a male offspring, followed by several female offspring. Those offspring mate with each other and live off the blood of the bee and develop into adults. And they don't kill the bee. They basically weaken the bee so that the bee actually emerges from the cell in a weakened state. But during the feeding, the mites can transmit viruses and other pathogens. And as mite levels build up within the colony, these secondary pathogens actually break out of the holes that they're normally restrained in and cause lots of problems and eventually can kill the colony.
Varroa destructor is a formidable foe, and Dennis Anderson is working on a long-term research project to discover ways to combat it. But that's still years down the track.
When you look at the bee after it's been parasitised, it looks like a normal bee in most instances. If it's been transmitting viruses and the viruses start to have an effect, then you start to see symptoms from those viruses. So sometimes the bee can show deformed wings, for instance. But if it hasn't transmitted those viruses, the emerging bee will look like a normal bee, but it will be weakened and its immune system will be weakened and its lifespan will be reduced from something like 6 weeks, perhaps down to one half of that.
That's very interesting. So that its lifespan could be halved?
It could be halved, yes.
One, two, three, four.
This song wasn't meant to be about a varroa-infected bee, but listen to the words.
Half a bee, philosophically, must ipso facto half not be. But half the bee has got to be a vis-a-vis its entity. Do you see? But can a bee be said to be or not to be an entire bee when half the bee is not a bee due to some ancient injury? Singing. A lardy bee, a 1, 2, 3, Eric the half a bee.
That's John Cleese with one of the Monty Python songs, although the varroa is not a laughing matter. Long before colony collapse became an overnight media sensation, varroa was well entrenched in America's honeybee population. And this is one of the major reasons colony numbers have halved in America since the 1950s. They're now down to 2.5 million hives. When varroa strikes in a country, it first wipes out practically all wild bee colonies. And that leaves only a reduced population of severely weakened managed hive bees. It's not nearly enough for what is being asked of the bees in America. So serious is the problem that in Iowa in late June, there was an international symposium on the threats to pollination. Background Briefing recorded the session. Speakers disagreed about what was causing colony collapse. Professor Marla Spivak says a major reason is pesticides.
The problem was that beekeepers had to control these mites because we have pollination contracts that needed to be fulfilled. If we had not done that, the almonds would not be pollinated, apples, there would not have been sufficient honeybees to fulfill those pollination contracts. And so the beekeepers reluctantly turned to using pesticides to control varroa. And I say reluctantly because beekeepers are staunch advocates against reckless pesticide use. Their bees have been killed by pesticide use on crops for years. This is not a group of people that turned easily to use pesticide. It's not something they wanted to do, but they had to keep their colonies alive.
Unfortunately, if she's right, the pesticides might be killing not only the varroa, but inadvertently the bee itself. And the varroa mites have kept evolving to develop resistance to whatever the beekeepers threw at them. Marla Spivak said that as well, because of the growth of monocultures in America, there's a reduction in the kind of wildflowers and weeds where bees can get their nutrition. There are acres of corn and soybeans, but for the bees, the nutritional value is practically nil. And malnourished bees are prone to disease.
There's increased movement of bees, and all this leads to increased horizontal transmission of diseases and pests between the colonies. And that's what we're up against. And then you have all of that, and then you add one more thing or two more things, and that's what we call colony collapse. So the new pathogen or new pesticide is happening on top of all of this. And so everybody and their mother, quite literally, is calling me and all of you on the phone and with this question, what's going on with the bees? What's going on? And it's just not a simple answer. And with all due respect to the media, and I know I'm being taped here, what's going on with the honeybees is not a soundbite.
Marla Spivak, an entomologist from the University of Minnesota, is explaining that colony collapse doesn't have a single cause. and she points to photographs of the modern urban and agricultural landscape, spreading cities, golf courses, and rolling acres of crops with few trees and flowers.
This is what's going on with the bees. Honeybees and all bees are caught up in our land use and our stewardship of the land, and what's going on with them is a reflection of our land use. And in fact, what's going on with the honeybees is what's going on with us.
The next speaker was Jeff Pettus from the US Department of Agriculture. It's been his job to deal with the media and public concern about the disappearing bees. And he says much of the talk about it has been fanciful rubbish.
I just have to tell you that the crop circle thing... No, I'm serious. You get all these media talks, and finally one day I said, it's really crop circles. That the bees are going out there and making crop circles. And so I threw that out as my theory. And the first time I threw it out, they said, really? You're kidding? I said, yeah, I'm kidding. But it's been in print now a couple of times. So that's... And it's good. It's a good way to get people thinking. What would you expect then if crop circles were involved? You'd expect to see bee losses next to crop circles. Of course, it's hard to find the crop circles. But it points out a good thing, that is some of the detective work that we're doing.
The US Department of Agriculture has been trying to unravel all the disparate bits of information about colony collapse.
We're looking at where have the bees been? Have they been on canola? Have they been on corn? Have they been in this environment? Have they been in that environment? We're asking these epidemiological questions about what are their treatment regimes and all that kind of stuff. So we're doing a lot of that work. And what's coming from that is that the picture is very complicated.
Jeff Pettus says that in his opinion, the varroa mite may be the trigger for a new pathogen in the bee world.
Our working hypothesis about what's going on with bees and why they're in poor health and this new set of symptoms is that we're dealing with some primary stress. And the primary stress is likely to be varroa mites, which Marla's talked about, some management issue, which could be longer migration of colonies across the U.S. Nutrition certainly could be a primary stressor, and pesticide use. All of these stressors could be putting the colony in a weakened state, allowing some secondary pathogen to actually kill the bees, because the bees are dying in a very short time frame. So that points more towards a pathogen. When we've had some of these other ones acting in the past, the colonies kind of dwindle more slowly. Here we're seeing a very rapid loss. So we think there's a two-tier thing going on. Primary stress leading to secondary pathogen outbreak. And what that pathogen is, we don't know at this time.
Attending the global conference in Iowa was a delegation of Australian beekeepers, scientists and government officials. And Background Briefing caught up with some of them back in Australia as they reported to local communities.
Paula Dewar, I'm a queen bee breeder from Queensland.
It's an amazing industry, isn't it? There's so many different diverse groups, isn't there?
Yes, a lot of people just think of bees and honey, but when you get down to it, there are a lot of other sectors.
Here in Melbourne at the annual conference of the Australian Honeybee Council, Paula Dewar gave her impressions of what she'd seen in Iowa.
Yes, there was four, I think it was, experts with regard to bee health that work in the US, two from the USDA and two were university researchers in different areas, and they all were coming at it from completely different areas. There was one who didn't believe that it was a new phenomenon, another thought that there was something there, and then one of the researchers from Minneapolis, Minnesota University, put forward a proposal that with all the pollination that the bees do there, the poor nutrition, not sufficient time for build-up of recoup from pollination work, there was just a lot of variables that they thought put together perhaps is causing this colony problem, not just one thing.
In other words, the Americans are working their bees too hard. Australia has a different mix of climates to America, and many of our trees flower in winter. And so far we've had few problems with insecticides. But no one knows what would happen here if varroa got in.
Varroa mite can decimate a colony, In the US, some of the treatments are not effective because the bees have built up an immunity, or the varroa rather, has built up an immunity. Some of the treatments are just not effective, and if the beekeepers aren't aware of that, then, you know, their colonies are going to go down if they're not getting rid of the sufficient mites.
Paula Dewar. The chief scientist on the Australian delegation to the US was Dennis Anderson from the CSIRO.
I'm a trained bee pathologist and have been working in bee pathology now for 25 plus years. And walking in from the outside and seeing this pathology problem was a real eye-opener. One of the things that struck me was the lack of science that was underpinning this disorder. Beekeepers and scientists had an indication that the loss of colonies during the last winter period in the US was higher than what they normally get. Normally over winter in the US, colony losses run at about 30%, much higher than what we have here in Australia, possibly due to the varroa mite and the effects that it has. But in the last winter, the losses were at about 45%, which is 15% on top of their normal losses. Now, that mightn't sound like a great deal, but if you take that across the whole of the US through all commercial hives, that's a lot of dead bees. And regardless of who you spoke to over there, whether it was researchers or beekeepers or extension people, everybody agreed that those losses were real. Even the skeptics that thought that colony collapse disorder wasn't something new, they all agreed that there were heavier losses last winter. It then sort of comes down to, what were those losses due to?
Dennis Anderson says the Americans are still searching for the answers, and in his estimation, they're not being very scientific about it.
Now, some beekeepers actually reported that some of the losses happened very quickly, and others reported that it was not so quickly. So this name became attached to the disorder, colony collapse disorder, and the name came to refer to a disorder which was not properly classified. So even though they had a rough set of symptoms that were associated with the disorder, those symptoms weren't very defined. So if they said, okay, the bees flew out of the colony and just disappeared, some people said, well, they disappeared rapidly, like within 48 hours. And others said, well, it took them months to disappear.
Dennis Anderson. Some of his scepticism about the CCD phenomenon is now beginning to creep into the American media. Here's a reading from an article in Slate magazine in mid-July.
Beekeepers opted to keep their colonies on life support with selective breeding and by sprinkling them with medicine and insecticides aimed at the invading mites. This was no longer a hobby for amateurs. The only honeybees left had become the cows of the insect world, virtually extinct in the wild, hopped up on antibiotics and more likely to reproduce via artificial insemination than by their own recognizance.
Background Briefing asked Dennis Anderson for a comment.
When you do look at honeybee management in the States, it's a lot different to our management. The use of antibiotics is a big issue. It was just raised there in that article, propped up on antibiotics. When beekeepers put their colonies into winter in the US, they normally close them up and feed them a feed of antibiotics before they sort of shut down. That's regardless of whether the colony has disease or not. Those sort of practices we would not use in Australia, that's for sure. I mean, if you're asking for the appearance of disease-resistant organisms, you would use those sorts of practices.
Dennis Anderson also says that the disorder will need to repeat itself on the same scale this winter for it to be considered a new phenomenon. Since Background Briefing spoke to Dennis Anderson, one new cause for colony collapse has been suggested by American scientists. It's called IAPV. Israeli acute paralysis virus, and it's carried by Australian bees. As Aussie bees are exported to the US, this new research released in September shocked the world of bees. Australian bee researchers dispute this evidence, and in November, new American research cleared the Aussie bees of spreading CCD. A more promising line of research is probably suggested by comedian Jerry Seinfeld's new movie, in which he voices the character of Barry B. Benson, a bee with attitude.
For thousands of years, humans have misunderstood them and feared them. Now, one bee in a turtleneck sweater is going to change everything.
Stand back. These are winter boots.
Why does his life have any less value than yours?
Barry B. Benson, a.k.a. Jerry Seinfeld, is overworked to the point of extinction.
So you'll just work us to death?
We'll try.
The dropping number of bees in America may indeed be due to overwork. At a recent food conference, University of Pennsylvania entomologist Dennis Van Engelsdorp talked about the way bees are managed in America.
We've developed an agricultural system which is monoculture, which means we have acres and acres of plants that come to bloom in one period of time, and we need to bring a lot of bees or pollinators into that area for a very short period of time. We have to get them out before we start spraying our insecticides, and we need them right there for the bloom. And in fact, half the colonies in the country are moved on trucks, either up and down the coast, increasingly across the country. So for instance, a Pennsylvania beekeeper will find his hives in January in Florida doing citrus, move up to Pennsylvania. Right now, they're in apple orchards. They'll go to New York in apple orchards at the end of the week. Then they'll go to Maine for blueberries, come down to Massachusetts or New Jersey for cranberries, come back to Pennsylvania for pumpkins before going back down to Florida. And so that's a very typical setup. Increasingly, however, bees are now, 2 years ago was the first time we issued export permits from Pennsylvania to California in February. And that's because of the almond bloom. In 4 years from now, there will be more almond trees in blossom in California than there are bees in the country to pollinate.
Dennis Van Engelsdorp. Changing agricultural practices and simple beekeeping economics is placing pressure on bees all over the world. Once upon a time, when there was a good supply of managed bees and wild and feral bees, nobody paid for pollination. But last year, for the first time, and for just 1 month in California, the use of bees for pollination brought in more money than all the honey collected in all of America for a year. California produces 80% of the world's almonds, and all of them are grown in the Central Valley region. This means as hives crisscross America during the year, when they end up in California, they bring quite a lot of baggage. Californian beekeeper Randy Oliver.
Being a California beekeeper, what we get is we get an onslaught of every disease that comes in the United States winds up in California the next year. So a disease that might have normally taken 100 years to travel across the country travels across country in 1 year because beekeepers from all of the United States all come to almost the same time. So what it means is we're constantly getting hammered by new problems very quickly.
And amongst these troubles is the Varroa destructor. But Randy Oliver doesn't think he's seeing colony collapse because of Varroa. He says it's pesticides, but it isn't as bad as the media make it.
Pollinators in general, wild pollinators, whether it's bees, whether it's wasps, flies, butterflies, hummingbirds, bats, across the world are having a hard time right now. With the amount of habitat destruction, the amount of pesticide use, it's hard for pollinators everywhere. And the honeybees are in the same boat as the rest of the pollinators. Now, as far as colony collapse disorder, this is an instance where the press got something, and then they just keep repeating each other's news stories without ever going back to the original facts. And we've had a lot of misinformation out there.
One of the ways that American beekeepers have built up after bad years of disease in the past is to import healthy Australian honeybees. Although, as we've already noted, there's still heated debate about whether those same honeybees are bringing new viruses into America. But when Background Briefing spoke to Randy Oliver in July, he was using Australian research to help him make his bees healthier.
As I'm sitting here in my chair, I'm looking at two Australian books, which I'm reading right now. One's called Fat Bees, Skinny Bees by Doug Somerville, and another's a stack of papers by an Australian researcher called Graham Kleinschmidt. both these guys, the Australians, have actually been ahead of the research in the United States on the field of providing nutrition, protein nutrition for bees, and how that affects us. Now, the reason that I think the Australians were ahead of us on this is because of your eucalypts there in Australia. The honeybee does not get as much nutrition out of them as they do from the European weeds and wildflowers. So the Australians had to get on this to find out, you know, what it takes to keep the bees good and strong. Well, it just so happens that this is exactly what we need here in the United States to do this shift from trying to make a honey crop in the middle of summer to instead trying to get big colonies in the middle of winter to pollinate the almonds. And I just sent off an article this morning to the American Bee Journal based upon some of this Australian research on how beekeepers can adjust their management strategies in order to fatten up their bees, in order to provide them with the proper protein nutrition.
Randy Oliver. The book on fat bees, skinny bees, was written by Australian bee expert Doug Somerville.
It's a bit hard to say you can have a fat insect and a skinny insect, but insects actually do have fat layers, and fat is good in insects because it increases their longevity and makes them healthier and more resistant to pests and diseases. So if you've got a bee that's well fed and it's nice and bulked out, it'll actually have a longer lifespan and be far more productive than something that's being stressed nutritionally. And if something's stressed nutritionally in all livestock enterprises, they're far more prone to diseases and pests and more likely to live a lot less longer.
And that fat bee can therefore do the job better of pollination or produce more honey? Is that the consequence of that bee being fatter?
If you get a good diet and everything's balanced, then the potential longevity of a well-fed bee compared to a poorly fed bee is twice the length in time. To have well-fed, good nutrition sort of supply to the beehive is a critical factor in commercial beekeeping in the Australian context.
Doug Somerville, who works for the New South Wales Department of Agriculture. In the past, Australian commercial beekeeping was all about honey. But now, like America, paid pollination of monocultural crops is becoming the favoured business model. Speaking to Australian beekeepers, Background Briefing found they were both fearful of what Varroa could do to the industry, but optimistic that Australians could manage any outbreak of the disease. The growth in our pollination-dependent crops in recent years came from a boom in tax-effective investments called MIS schemes. Now, although the federal government recently closed some of the tax loopholes on these schemes, almonds are still considered a lucrative investment for companies like Macquarie Bank and Timbercorp.
Natural or processed, almonds are the world's most versatile and popular edible nuts. And that versatility has been rewarded with strongly growing consumption. Combining agribusiness scale with sophisticated horticultural and irrigation technology, the Timbercorp Almond Project produces the large, lightly coloured almonds that command premium prices on world markets.
Supply of bees will be a critical risk factor for the almond industry. In late August, the beehives were set up in the almond orchards in the Mildura region in Victoria, where companies like Timbercorp have their plantations. The man responsible for hiring enough beehives from all around Australia for the almond crop in Mildura is bee broker Trevor Monson.
It's just the sheer numbers of hives that's needed. Like, we've got forecasts that we're going to exceed 200,000 hives of bees for almonds pollination in Australia within the next 5 to 7 years. And to do that, we're going to have to transport bees from Queensland through to Victoria just to supply the need.
If you're visiting Mildura or Robin Vale in northwestern Victoria next August, remember there are 42,000 hives of honeybees strategically placed to fertilise the almond blooms. And it's not a cheap exercise.
The supply and demand is probably the biggest factor. That if you're going to need two-thirds of the bees that, you know, live in the eastern states, well then you're going to demand that you need them. You're also going to have to pay because of the demand and the distances travelled. And so that will put the price up alone, let alone things like Varroa. And that's where the price went through the roof in California. I don't know, I think they lost something like nearly a million hives of bees.
The forecast is that California is going to need 2 million hives, and there are only 2.5 million in the whole of America. Australia is facing the same increasing need for hives, but even if the Varroa mite comes here, Trevor Monson isn't too worried.
I believe because what we've seen that's happened in California and now happened in New Zealand a couple of years ago. I think we're heading in the right direction. That, you know, we've had a couple of trips to New Zealand from research people and that. I think we'll be able to handle varroa, you know, much like the New Zealanders have, and be able to get on top of it and move on. There will be some losses, but I think we'll be right.
Watching all these recent developments in Australia is Fred Benecki, a former beekeeping specialist with the New South Wales Department of Agriculture. And he's published a Commonwealth Government research paper on commercial beekeeping.
We've all been sitting back waiting to see when pollination really branched out here. For many years, in areas such as Orange and Battler, beekeepers have done some pollination with palm fruits, apples and pears and cherries and the stone fruit. But it wasn't until the recent, and I'm talking now about only 5, 6 years, 10 years at the most, the recent expansion of almond plantings, that pollination has become important, because most trees can get by with partial pollination, most fruit trees, from honeybees. But almonds are totally dependent. The pollen sort of floats in the air like lead pellets. So it requires a bee to transfer the pollen from one species to another, one variety of tree to the other. And since the big expansion in the area of almonds, it's become essential. And also, in the past, producers, orchardists, haven't been very happy about paying for the services of bees. But now, since the almond industry is quite a well-organised industry now, they realise they have to pay, and it's become quite profitable for beekeepers to do so. But it's not easy.
The pollination industry, especially for almonds, is showing no signs of slowing its growth. Almond companies in California will double their present production by 2010. And in recent years, they've averaged £1 billion of nuts a year. And in Australia, almond companies are planting trees at a rapid rate to satisfy demand for almonds in countries like India. It's no wonder that more beekeepers here want to move into the pollination market. Add the varroa mite into the picture and the whole beekeeping economy changes. Fred Benecki.
In the United States of America, before varroa arrived there, they were big honey producers and big pollinators. They got money from pollination and they got a lot of money from honey. Since the advent of varroa, the total number of hives available for pollination has decreased because there are not so many hives kept anymore. Since the advent of varroa, all of the incidental pollination from feral bees has disappeared because all the bees have died out through varroa mites. And the American beekeeping economy has switched more and more to pollination. Bees are in much greater demand than previously. And the same thing happened in New Zealand. They've only had varroa mite there for the last 4 or 5 years, and in the Southern Island only in the last year or so. But suddenly there's a huge demand for hives for pollinating kiwi fruit. And it can't be met. There are just not enough hives left to do it. So the price for pollination has gone up and up. And New Zealand beekeepers are finding it's probably more profitable to concentrate on pollinating kiwi fruit, for some of them anyway, than it is to go out and try and produce a crop of honey.
Large-scale monoculture means you need lots of bees, but bees are in short supply. Background Briefing checked several investment analyst reports on future prospects for Australian almond companies. Only one analyst mentioned supply of bees as being an important performance risk for the almond investments. Here's a reading.
Due to the rapid rate of expansion of the Australian almond industry and the recent emergence of potential threats to the future supply of honeybees, there exists potential for the scarcity of honeybees to reduce pollination rates and or increase production costs.
From the CSIRO, Dennis Anderson.
As industries such as the almond industry grows, there would be limits on its growth should varroa get in. There would only be a certain amount of bees to go around, and there wouldn't be enough, I believe, looking at the figures, to actually supply the future projected growth of the almond industry. So, of course, an incursion of the varroa mite is an extremely important issue.
And that incursion threat is not far away. The varroa destructor mite is very comfortable just to the north of Australia. In Malaysia, the Asian honeybee is its host, but it isn't harmed by varroa. If it got to Australia, it could devastate the European honeybee. In May this year, a Cairns beekeeper, Maurie Damon, got a call to go down to a boat moored at the docks.
There's a boat that's been on hard standing in the port area of Cairns for the last couple of years. And they took the mast off to do some work on it, said they could get the boat up and running and back out to sea. When they took the mast off and laid it down, called the electrician in, and as he was running some wires through the mast, some of these bees came out and suggested he should make himself scarce, which he did. He went and saw the boss. And the boss rang me and said, we've got a bee problem, a swarm in the mast, could I come and get rid of it? So I went down, had a look, and I saw that these bees didn't look like Apis mellifera, which I'm used to. They looked like Apis serrana, which I'd seen at various field days and excursions at conferences in Asia. So I collected some of the bees, took them down to DPI, where they put them under the microscope, and promptly identified them as Apis serrana.
When the news came out, it kind of spread around Australia and the world beekeeping industry.
Very, very quickly. It was an absolute horror to see that these bees had arrived within hours or days. It was on the internet in America and has caused some annoyance to Australian beekeepers because of that.
If these bees had been allowed to escape into Queensland and set up hives, Varroa would have arrived in Australia. Maurie Damon's expertise saved the day. But with all the thousands of tons of cargo and hundreds of ships and planes coming into Australia, it's probably only a matter of time before Varroa comes in as a stowaway. That's why at major ports and terminals around Australia, the quarantine experts keep what are called sentinel hives.
You want to come up?
Yes, I'm coming up now.
In Sydney, in between Port Botany and Sydney Airport, Tony Hill takes background briefing, dressed in a bee-deterring spacesuit, on a tour.
Three hives?
Three hives. And what I do is, as they want surveillance on the sticky pad that comes in from the EPI at Bathurst, under Nick Annan, I change them around from one hive to another hive. But it's done in through the brood. Now I'm going to open up now.
Okay, all right, so we're three hives, and these are called sentinel hives.
After smoking the bees to settle them down, Tony Hill shows us how they lay a trap for the Varroa mite. Using a plastic strip impregnated with miticide, or mite killer, in a solution that is bad for any mites but doesn't harm the bees.
There's a false floor in the box. What happens is, one side of the plastic is very sticky. And what we do is we pull this out. We insert the plastic in there. We then put this piece of gauze over the top of it. Otherwise, if you left it in there without the gauze, you lose too many bees. They get stuck on the sticky paper. We don't want that. What we want is the Varroa mite in there. So what happens is the bee, if he's got Varroa mite on him, and usually it's hanging on his body in the wax mirror area, and what occurs is when they crawl up the babel strip, the mite detaches itself from the bee, falls down through the frames, through the gauze into the sticky pad.
And luckily you've had no mites?
No mite at all yet. None whatsoever. None whatsoever. We're very, very lucky up to date. I believe what's going to happen first up, that most of our feral bees will cop it first. The ones that are in hollow logs, where they're in cavities of buildings, they'll be the first ones to cop it. And there's nothing we can do about that because you can't get into them. That's the problem.
And they do a lot of the free pollination or incidental
That's
pollination.
Right, right. But they'll be the first ones to cop it because we won't know where they are. It may be out there now. We don't know. We're covering it pretty well. We're trying to. We're doing the best we can.
Tony Hill, one of the many volunteer Australian beekeepers who run the National Sentinel Hive Program, Australia's last line of defence against Varroa destructor. And back in the USA, the media panic about colony collapse disorder, CCD, has subsided a little. But when there is a report,
familiar themes and phrases are repeated.
Hank Hansen has been raising bees for 15 years. Without warning, bees have been disappearing.
All of a sudden, you come here, there'd be like this today, and tomorrow you come out here and there's nothing. All the bees are totally gone.
And the effect goes beyond his bee business.
Einstein said that when the bees go, 4 years later, man will follow.
The Albert Einstein quote about the extinction of man if the bees disappear has been used quite a lot in the discussion of colony collapse disorder. And like most things about CCD, it sounds dramatic. But as for it being attributed to Albert Einstein, well, there's no evidence for it anywhere. And with CCD, it's how the evidence is interpreted that's a real issue. That's what interested Bob Danker, an entomologist with the US Department of Agriculture, when he reflected on the panic that engulfed the media, the public, and beekeepers about the disappearing bees. Here's part of his talk in late June at the International Pollination Symposium in Ames, Iowa.
So I want to begin with just a few minutes of comments about CCD by summing up my thoughts in 4 points. Point one, we lose a lot of commercially managed bees in this country every year. Some years more, some years less. It's been like that for a long time. It does seem to be getting worse. It's clearly a testament to the tractability of Apis mellifera and the professionalism of our industry that we can replace these losses every year. We have not had a significant shortage of honeybees for pollination yet. I hope it stays that way. As a way of example, I work very closely with a commercial beekeeper who specializes in crop pollination. I think this person is very progressive, does the job very well. His bees, on average, pollinate about a half a dozen different crops a year. And this operation, for as long as I've been involved, routinely loses 30% of the colonies every year. It's part of doing this intensive pollination business. For reasons completely unrelated to CCD, he loses lots of bees. Point two, CCD does exist. I am convinced from trustworthy sources that there's a problem out there. Point three, this is my only negative comment. When I read media reports, and certainly not all of them, but a large number of them, particularly geared toward the lay public, I see the first 2 points that I just made in those reports. We lose lots of bees and there's CCD. But then the line between those 2 points either blurs or gets completely extinguished. And I think a lot of people believe that all these losses we suffer are due to CCD. I think this is an untenable position because there are certainly losses due to CCD, but a lot of losses are certainly explainable by other mortality factors. Final point. My sense is we are on the cusp here of some excellent cutting-edge research dealing with wide issues of honeybee health and honeybee mortality. I cannot help but feel that we will certainly discover why bees die. It's quite likely that we will discover new reasons why bees die, particularly related to this colony collapse disorder. I think both immediately and in the long term for the beekeeping industry, this can't help but be a good thing.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Research, Anna Whitfield. Technical operator, Timothy Nicastri. Executive producer is Kirsten Garrett. I'm Stan Correy, and this is ABC Radio National.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.